Hey, welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous director, Kyle Couch, all the way from Michigan. His film, The Tent, is available somewhere, but he'll tell you at the end. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, when you're filming this film, I mean, it's called The Tent. So, I guess we should start at the beginning. You have to get a tent from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that was a little bit of a struggle for sure. We looked at a lot of different options for the tent, and the one we ended up landing on was a monstrosity from eBay. I think it was like $400 bucks. And it was like a military-grade tent. And when this thing came in the mail, it was in a box the size of my couch, and it had duct tape, or not even duct tape, but like packing tape wrapped completely around it. And as soon as we started cutting the tape, this thing started busting out, and I just knew, like, oh, man, I just asked for trouble with buying this thing. And but luckily, after about 4 hours of being out in the parking lot trying to get this thing up, we did, and just realized, like, okay, we're not going to be able to move this thing a lot. We're going to have two locations. We're going to have, one location, thanks to a suggestion by my cinematographer, inside the studio, so all the internal shots would be inside the studio, and then all the external shots would be on location in Ray Township.
So when you got the tent in the parking lot, you got it up, it took you 4 hours. I guess we got to ask how long it took you to take it down.
Yeah, a lot quicker, because I didn't give a crap at that point. I was kind of like, okay, listen, this isn't... this isn't some fancy thing that I want. Like, this thing is rugged. It's military grade. I'm pretty sure you could blow it up and it would still stand. So I was like, let's just get it in the back of it. I think it existed in a trunk for a good 6 weeks before we started shooting. It just sat in my buddy's trunk. And just when we pulled it out, that thing was just all wrinkled. And it was for the better, because we wanted something that looked, apocalyptic, so to speak.
So when you're done shooting, did you light the tent on fire?
You know, it's funny you say that. We didn't. We ended up throwing it away. But there was a scene that I had planned for the end. This didn't actually end up happening, but we were going to light it on fire. Unfortunately, this tent was massive. And so where we were at, there were some kind of restrictions about where we were shooting. And so starting a fire that big, especially we were kind of wedged between two sets of, shrubbery and trees, that it could have definitely been not a good situation. So unfortunately, I didn't get to have my big moment where I lit this thing on fire. But I think the story took a turn that, didn't kind of lend to it being set on fire.
Fair enough. Your film starts with a shot of like a guy sitting in the backyard. Looks like he's doing a YouTube thing, uh-huh, or just a general video for somebody. Where did that idea come from?
You know, that idea came late in the game. I was looking for an opportunity to kind of bookmark certain sections of the film. Maybe a chapter marker type scenario. And I really wanted something that was, a bookend, something that we started with and we ended with, and it popped up throughout the film, kind of a thorough line of what was going on. And actually, one of the things that is not explained, and there's a lot that's not explained on purpose, but the lessons that he is teaching, and this is, maybe a little bit of a spoiler alert, but it's not a huge one. But I will say, the lessons that he's actually teaching, I was like, what's going to be the rhythm of this? And, I looked at, funny enough for a movie like this, the Holy Bible. And, I discovered, or I had already known about it, the story of when Jesus went out to the wilderness and was tempted by the devil. And so each one of those moments in the film when he's giving a specific tip, I had to kind of reconstruct the ways that Jesus was tempted by the devil into survival tips. Oh. And so that was kind of the idea of, I wanted to put them at significant moments in the film where we immediately see David fail at that very thing he's preaching about in the videos. And I don't want to say too much more because obviously I want people to watch the movie, but
of course,
if you watch it, that's a cool little tidbit that I knew for a fact people weren't going to pick up that it was, you know, based off of, you know, Jesus in the wilderness. That was kind of something for me, but that was where kind of the story began to take its structure as far as those self-taped videos go.
Okay. Now, obviously, we've got a tent. We usually presume there's a forest of some kind.
Yeah.
So how was shooting in the forest?
You know, it was cold. It was cold. We shot in October of 2000. We actually shot this back in 2017. So October 2017, I'd say early October, and we're in Michigan. And oftentimes we would shoot till about 4 in the morning. And, you know, right after sundown, you could just feel the temperature starting to drop.
Oh, yeah.
And I really have to – and that's when we start. You know, it's not like – you know, there were a couple days where we did shoot some daytime scenes, obviously. But for the most part, a lot of our filming was at night. The whole idea in the beginning was that this whole thing takes place in one night. So we had to make it feel and look that way. And so I just remember how cold it got. And we actually had to have Tim and Lulu, our two leads, sit in cars in between setups because of how cold they were getting. You know, we could all wear coats behind the camera. In front of the camera, we couldn't have them in winter coats. We had to make them look like it was just a summer night. But it wasn't. It was an October cold night in Michigan.
Did you have any plans of shooting this during the summer and it just got pushed to October? Or that's what your plan was the whole time?
Our plan was definitely to shoot in October. I was actually filming a documentary that summer, so it kind of butt heads with the shooting of this film. So I was shooting a documentary 4 days out of the week for about 3 months, and then at night I was planning and doing pre-production on the tent. And so I knew we couldn't shoot this in summer. It wouldn't add up with my schedule. I'd burn out too quickly. And so I knew it was going to be in October. Mistake on me, egg on my face. I didn't realize how freaking cold it was going to be, but my actor sure did realize it very quickly. And but they're very forgiving and graceful, and we all still did have a very good time doing it.
You seem to spend a lot of time night shooting. Like, a lot of time. You're going in, you're telling me it's 7 o'clock at night. You're prepared to be there till 7 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that feel after so many days of night shooting? Plus, you probably have a real job on top of that.
Yeah, well, you know, luckily I did take a 2-week vacation from my real job to be able to shoot this. So that wasn't a challenge, but yeah, rerouting and rewiring my brain for sleep and all that stuff. Luckily I didn't have a kid at the moment. So there wasn't any of that challenge, but yeah, I mean, there was literally one night where, we shot, in the city until, I think it was till 6 in the morning. Like, literally, now I have had moments of where I'm fighting sundown. While we're shooting, like, oh man, let's get this last shot. The sun's going down. It'll be too dark. But I've never had a moment where I was shooting and fighting against sun coming up. And I remember specifically one morning we were literally like fighting to make sure we could get all the shots that looked like at night before the sun came up and ruined them. So yeah, there was some challenge there. That was probably a very surreal moment for me.
Now, I'm guessing that might have been the shot where he meets Gabriel on the stairs. It's probably my favorite shot in the film. Is that the one we're discussing?
Yes. There's a shot. They're kind of tussling for a moment. And,
yes.
Yeah, you can see the sun coming.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, that was one moment where I was like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here, man? This is nuts. But it was the last day of shooting. We had to get everything.
it looked, oh, that's your last day, because it looks freezing in that shot. Like, you can see the breath coming out of you guys. I'm like, it's got to be at least minus 10.
Yeah, the adrenaline at that juncture was pumping and coursing through my veins. I was like, we got to do this. We got to get it.
Now, I want to discuss set design. You seem to spend a lot of time on your set design with, I guess, Tim. I think I have the right name of the guy.
Yep.
He seems to do a lot of it when he's discussing the traps, when he's discussing the creatures outside. And he seems to always be doing something to make the set bigger than it is. I understand it's a small area, and I realize you probably didn't move that much in the film. Yeah. But he is doing so much of that building for you throughout the film on the set. He's picking up a trap. He's picking up this. He's moving his chair. He's feeding himself. He's looking for his food. So was that all built by you or some of that him at the same time to build that world for the set design? Because, I mean, I do see it there in the set. But with that set design being there, he was able to build it bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I didn't build any of this stuff myself. I had a fantastic production team built all that stuff. They were just great. I had one guy, his name's James Howie. He is phenomenal, and he was like, I'll build you a fake bear trap. And so he built something out of rubber so that way Tim could get it caught on his foot. And, I mean, he created this mechanism and brought it in, and everybody – I remember everybody looking at it and being like, dude, that looks legit. Like, that's awesome. So he did a lot of stuff. Bernadette Preger, she did – she designed – this massive staff that was in the background that had like broken shards of glass on it. We wanted it to look like something you would put together from, you know, just scraps you found. Andrew, he was one of our prop guys. He went out and bought all this dirt and he just draped it all over everything so that way it looked old. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many people that kind of just built this set and made it look the way it was. And I remember just walking into the tent. I think the first day we were on set inside the tent, and I remember just walking in and being like, whoa, you guys just killed it. I mean, this looks super cool. And, I mean, so much detail. I really wish we could have got so much more detail that was in that tent, because it was, I mean, those actors, they, I don't know how many times they said, like, dude, this feels like we're living inside this thing. Like, this is awesome. So that is, and then of course, Tim, you know, selling it. Tim, he is just so good at grabbing onto things and kind of making things work around him. And I can't thank him enough. Like, he, you're right, he sold it. He really did.
So let's start on Tim. I mean, he is the film, let's be honest. There's nothing against the other woman, but Tim's pretty much our main character.
Yeah.
And where did you find Tim? Did you know him? Did he just walk on an interview and go, hey, I'm here?
Yeah. No, you know, Tim, I've known Tim since probably 2015. I shot a short film with him. Funny enough, I shot a short film with Tim back in 2015. It's called The Eulogy, and Lulu was in that film. She played opposite him, and that's where I just kind of first recognized their dynamic between the two of them. And actually, we won this competition, and the grand prize for it was you get sent to Sundance. And so, not the movie, just you get to go on a little trip to Sundance with your friends and family or whoever you wanted to bring, like 4 tickets or whatever.
That's
I'll
take that.
Yeah, it was awesome. We met a ton of people. We met like Elijah Wood and Molly Shannon and Judd Apatow. Like it was really cool. We met a lot of great people. But that was my first experience with him. I made a movie with him, and then boom, it like won us this prize that shot us to like this thing where you really feel like, you know, you're, oh man, you're in Hollywood now, you know, you're at Sundance and all that stuff. And then 3 days goes by and you go home and you're like, okay, I'm not in that anymore. but I just remember thinking like, man, he is so easy to work with. He is so collaborative. I saw him with Lulu in The Eulogy and he was just so, you know, giving, and you know, he wasn't trying to own a scene. You know, sometimes I've seen actors where they try to make scenes that are other actors' scenes, their scene, and he didn't do any of that stuff. He's so giving. And so I just knew from that point on I was going to work with Tim, and I did. I hired him, and another movie I did, Life Prescribed, he played a kind of a bad guy. And then The Tent, I remember talking to him and saying, I got this idea, and I really have you in mind for the part, the main role. And he was like, well, let me read it. Let's see. And after he read it, he was like, I'm in, whatever you need, I'm in. And that's basically, we worked from there.
Okay, well, then we got to get some love to Lulu. She's going to be mad at us if we left her alone after that spiel. How'd you meet Lulu?
Well, same thing. I had met her through the Eulogy. You know, really same thing as Tim. She just, you know, she's the type of person that really is can bring a realism to a character. And, like, I don't have to sit there and be like, hey, be realistic, or hey, add in like this little stuff in between your stuff. Like, she knows. And I specifically on the Eulogy, I remember I said, well, you know, this character, she's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and she smokes cigarettes, and I was like, do you smoke? And she was like, nope, I don't smoke. I don't really drink that often. I'm like, oh, okay, well, there's going to be some scenes of that. She goes, well, whatever you need. And there was a specific scene in that where she had to, like, basically chain smoke cigarettes. And she didn't even bat an eyelash. She was like, just let's do it. Let's make it happen. And I remember, like, I had an actor one time, and I'm not going to name any names, but basically there was a scene where they had to drink something, and it was like a grape juice stand-in for wine. And they wouldn't drink the grape juice because it was so high in sugar. And oh, I'm God, thinking, like, literally somebody chain smoked cigarettes, and they're not a smoker, you know, and like, hey man, I get it. We're not making like giant Hollywood movies here. I understand the sacrifice, but you know, just the dedication on somebody's part to really be like, hey, I'm all yours, like shape me. That made me really want to, you know, beyond just her great acting ability, that made me really want to work with Lulu again, because I knew she was dedicated. And so, yeah, I was actually originally going to play the role of Mary, but obviously not as Mary. It was going to be a male character. And my wife, kudos to her, she kind of came up with the idea to cast, maybe have a female. And as soon as the idea of making it a female came up, I couldn't think of anybody else but Lulu. And I remember the night before I was going to meet with her, I was praying, like, please let her take this. Like, please let her be interested. It's been a few years since I've seen her, you know, or a couple years. And as soon as she walked in, she was like, dude, I'm on, man. Like, your last movie won a grand prize. I feel like you can't do any wrong. And I'm like, well, that's very gracious of you. I appreciate that. Let's hope that we knock it out of the park this time. No pressure. But yeah, Lulu was just, Lulu and Tim together are for me, dream team leads for me, for my feature debut.
Okay. So I want to discuss your tension building. It doesn't stop. You build tension, and it's kind of like you start off, I would say it's almost like Mr. Rogers in the first video. Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. We're going to do something today, and we're going to discuss tent building. Okay. But your film, like, just takes me and puts me on a roller coaster and drops me, and it just keeps dropping, and I don't know when it's coming out. Obviously, I get it. By the end, I got it. Yeah. But if you had not shown me the very end scene, I don't think I could have told you what your film was about. So I guess my question is, was that your plan the whole time, just to put me on a tension ride and just finally let me off easy at the end?
You know, I think the short answer to that is yes. The long answer is, you know, there were definitely different iterations of the script as we were progressing through. And I have to give props to Tim again. I know it probably seems like I'm giving him a lot of props here, but I genuinely, like, he was my bro through this whole thing. Like he walked arm in arm with me throughout this entire, and he's still to this day, I'd say between him and Nancy, those two, as far as the crew members on the film, those two were in it from the beginning until the end, nonstop. And so I can't give either one of them enough props for that. But Tim, after reading one of the initial scripts, he was like, hey, I really like your ending. But what if we took this ending and really dropped it even further? And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he explained it to me. And again, I'm obviously not going to explain that too much because I don't want to give anything away. But he was like, let's do this. And I was like, no way. Like, absolutely not. I'm not even entertaining it. Like, I know what I'm trying to do here. And I'm not like, dude, I'm not interested in that. And he's like, that's fine. You know, you do whatever you got to do. But I just feel like it might work this way. And I said, oh, well, we'll see. And so I was like, I sat down, I turned on some music, and I just started writing. And I think it was like from page 75 on. And I was just kind of rerouted how that first part ended so that way I could route it into this kind of new ending. And I couldn't stop writing. Like, I felt possessed. It was weird. Like, it just started writing itself. And a lot of that came from pulling from my own personal experience with dealing with some of the issues that the film deals with towards the end there. And I think I ended up writing like 30 or 40 pages within under an hour.
Wow.
And, it was pretty rough. You know, it needed to go through some changes, but, I was like, I called Tim back and I said, dude, I just sent you an email, open it up. And he was like, all right, I'll open it up and I'll read it and then I'll call you back. And then, you know, he called me back within like 20 minutes and he was like, man, this did something to me. I don't know what it is, but this is it. This is it. I'm telling you, like, share it with a few other people to make sure this is it. But I'm telling you, I really feel strong about this new ending. And I did, I shared it with people and they were like, I cannot believe you did that. Like, that's, people are either going to hate this movie or they're going to love it. And that obviously gave me a lot of confidence in moving forward with it because, you know, I don't want to make something that, like, I mean, sure, I want to make something that everybody loves. But I don't want to make something that's safe. I feel like there's too much safe stuff going on out there. You know, I feel like I really want to make something that's a little dangerous and a little like, all right, man. You can do this, but I don't know how it's going to, you know, I don't know how people are going to perceive it. And, you know, I've read some reviews and there's certainly been some perceptions that are like, I don't like it. I hate it. You know, and then there's been other ones where they're like, dude, you blew me away. Like that was, I didn't see these things coming. So I'm kind of happy with that. You know, it's, I like that reaction to it. Instead of just like, yeah, it was all right, whatever, moving on.
Wow. After you saying that, I guess I'm going to have to bring this up. I wrote down the film's religion is more thought than seen. So meaning okay. I was thinking about religion more than what I was seeing on the screen. So I was reading depth in your pictures, what I'm trying to say. Was that a plan of yours? I think it was for me to do more thought as I watched it. Because, I mean, there are some down periods in this film. It's intense. But during those down periods, I'm thinking all the time about what I've seen. And as I said, the pieces start fitting in my brain. It does take me a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely wanted to leave something that kind of left you thinking after it was done. You know, you know, there is so much symbolism and, like, hidden things throughout this film. You know, kind of I mentioned with the Jesus in the wilderness stuff. And, there's so much more, like so much more. And there's a specific, I'm not going to talk about it, but there is a specific part where she is asking him about the traps.
Yes.
And I don't want to answer this, but, there's a lot of hidden agenda there in what I'm saying and what I mean by when she's asking him those things. And it's not kind of that the, you know, what they're not saying. You know, it's not as simple as that. There's a lot of subtlety into what was being said, and specifically about race and gender and whatnot. And so it was interesting to kind of play with those expectations that the characters had for the other person in that writing. So, yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. I definitely wanted to make people think.
Now, this may be a shot in left field. As I was watching this film, because I don't read anything about films beforehand, so whatever you guys send me, I do not read it. I'm sorry, I will never read it. I was waiting for an alien to show up at one point through this film. I was kind of like, because that's what they're talking about at the beginning. I'm like, is there an alien coming? Is something going to happen to them? And then I found as the film evolves, it goes somewhere different. Was that your plan at all, to make us think it was something different in the beginning? Because I definitely think it was a apocalyptic world he was living in.
Yeah, I definitely I wanted people to really put on their thinking caps and inspire their imagination to kind of be like, okay, what are these creatures? Like, what are these things? Are, you know, how did they bring about the end of the world? And what do they even look like? You know, like, that was a huge the movie Jaws, the movie Signs, those were big inspirations in the sense of, you know, kind of, and it's like cardinal sin, telling and not showing. You know, when it comes to creature features and stuff like that, I'm not interested most of the time in seeing what this thing looks like, unless it's, I mean, cause let's be honest, we've seen every creature design under the sun. Every single one. I think the most original thing, I saw this movie, The Ritual, on Netflix a couple years ago. Really excellent. People should watch it immediately. But there was the creature design in that film was so cool and different. It just caught me off guard because I'm like, wow, I haven't seen that in a long time. Like something, you know, original. So I really felt like with Jaws and Signs, listen, we know they're aliens. We know they're sharks. But we never really see it. We just feel the presence, and we see how the presence, what we do see, is what kind of layers it brings out of the characters. And that was huge for me, was just really getting to the heart of bringing out the layers of the characters and how they're dealing with this situation, more so than kind of explaining, is it an alien? Is it a demon? Is it a, you know, XYZ? I really kind of wanted to leave a lot of that to a degree. You know, obviously at the end we do explain a few things here, but to a degree I wanted to leave it up to the viewer to kind of decide, make it their own movie.
Okay, I'm not asking you to say anything, so I know what happened at the end. I mean, your end is like a bomb. You have this buildup. Like I said, the roller coaster, I hit the bottom and just boom. And is that what you're like, the end explains everything to me. Because I really feel, as a viewer, while I watched the film, I needed the end. You know, some films you're like, I can turn it off. I know where this is going. This is predictable.
Right.
I had no idea where your ending was going. Like, it comes out of the blue for me. Has anybody else said that to you, that they have no idea what the ending is? Because I expected something totally different.
You know, I've had a couple wise guys tell me, "Oh, I knew exactly what was coming," and maybe they did. I don't know, but I would say the majority. I think what I hear more often than not is not so much I didn't expect that ending. I mean, that is kind of laced in there with what they're saying, but they're saying I wasn't expecting the tonal shift.
Yeah,
that it takes at the end, that was the thing that really seems to trip people up a lot and really kind of excite them about the ending, is just the complete shift. And then kind of realizing too, and I had hoped to achieve this, which kind of realizing like, oh my gosh, if I'm looking back, this tonal shift that it takes, the breadcrumbs are laid right there for me the whole time. You know, and that was a huge thing for me, is just making sure that, okay, if we're going to do this pretty severe thing, I really hope that we earn it, you know, and not just lay it on the audience and then be like, what, that's stupid. You know, it's an earned ending.
I don't want to give anything away, but I could see the breadcrumbs as I watched it. I started picking up, but I couldn't put them together. Like, I knew they were there. I'm not saying you didn't give them to me.
Yeah.
They're there, but I guess I kind of maybe say, yeah, I might have, but I needed it at the end. I did find it sewed up nicely. I like that.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't, because if we can't talk about the ending, I can't really talk about the breadcrumbs, so I'm trying to avoid it. Your flashback scenes, they look like they were shot at a different time. You're saying they weren't. So you must have shot them during the day and everything else at night. Because it looks like it does have a beard at one point.
Yeah, so we actually had Tim, basically, we shot all of his beard stuff in the beginning. And then we shot he shaved off his beard, or trimmed it down. For some of the flashback scenes with my character.
Yes.
And then he completely shaved it off for the video scene. And actually, the one, I would say, the self-recorded scenes, those were done much later in the game, in like 2018. We added those in. But yeah, everything else, yeah, it was...
Hold on. I'm not going to let you get away that easily. Hold on. So you were done filming the movie in 2017. Did you know you need those scenes in 2018, or you watched the films and we need these?
Yeah, it was more of the latter. You know, a lot of the film was just them in the tent, and I wanted to add in some more stuff to it. So and just kind of flesh it out a little bit more. There were a couple of scenes that didn't work out exactly the way I wanted it to. And so I definitely, I wanted to add in this aspect of like, okay, give a little bit more leeway to who he was prior to, the crisis. And so that was where those scenes with myself kind of came in. That's where the scenes with him doing the YouTube, and actually the YouTube stuff was done much later, because even after shooting the stuff with me, it was like, okay, I wanted, you know, and Tim is such a good sport. He was like, wait, so you want to shoot some more stuff? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it, man. Like, I got this super cool idea. And he's like, all right, let's do it. And he was totally game. He put a little dye in his hair, shaved his face completely. Like, I was like, I want to make you look like you're in your 40s. And seriously, like, I'm not like trying to kiss Tim's butt here. Like, genuinely, this guy shaves his beard off. He looks like he's like in his 50s.
Oh yeah. He looked totally different. I'll give you that 100%.
Yeah. I've actually had a couple people even say, oh my gosh, I didn't even until I could start hearing his voice in a few more of them, I didn't even know that was the same guy.
Oh, well.
And I was like, oh, okay.
He looked like same face structure to me. That kind of gave it away, but that's just me, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim was so great to work with. I mean, I put him through hell and he'll walk through it with a smile on his face.
Okay, drone shots. How was drone shooting?
Drone shooting was great. You know, that was even something I had planned. Robert Skates, our cinematographer, he brought a drone on set, and I had a few ideas for what I was looking for, and, once he pulled it out, and I was like, okay, you know, like what, okay, if we're going to pull this off, you get basically 30 minutes of battery time. What are we going to do? You know? And so we just got those drone shots. He just flew it around. We got a lot of B-roll. And then, there were a few specific key moments, specifically with the dog at the beginning, where I wanted to have kind of a drone shot showing Tim's isolation or David's isolation. And then a little bit later on, we needed a few more drone shots of the woods at night for the creature's vision. And so, David, Peterson, our editor, he also had a drone. So he actually went out and just got a few drone shots himself, because, I'm a big, big believer, and I'm not bashing this by any means. Like, I've done it in the past. And this is why I know I don't like it. Using stock footage. I want to shoot all of our own stuff. I don't like using, you know, stock footage really for anything. I've done it, and I just feel like it's, you know, I'm not a big fan of it personally.
Continuing on, were there any bugs in the forest in October?
No, we didn't. No, I don't think we ran into much.
Well, at least you're not there in July because you would have had some issues.
Oh my gosh, eaten alive.
Okay, last thing I want to discuss, and then we get to fun questions, I promise. Dragging David across the ground.
Yes. It was actually thanks to our stunt guy, Michael Haas. He's a beast, first off, and he put a vest on Tim, and basically it's this vest that stops his back from getting super scratched up.
Okay.
And it goes, and so it went under his shirt, and then Michael Haas is basically our off-screen creature for a lot of it. And he was our stunt guy. He also, he did the fall, Michael Haas, he did the fall that Tim or David does towards the beginning in one of the flashbacks off of the balcony, which actually was about 10 feet high. And he fell right onto just some trash bags. And Tim, again, being so game, he's like, oh, I can do it. And I'm like, nah, man, let's let this stunt guy do it. And so, yeah, he, you know, put on the same outfit. And then, you know, we did the stunt guy thing and he fell off. So, yeah, he was the one that grabbed him by the feet and dragged him through the woods.
So, what? Okay, I was wondering how you did that. If you just grabbed him and dragged him, because that would have been my guess.
Yeah.
And you're basically standing right beside the stunt guy filming.
Yeah. That was Robert. You know, I was like, hey, can we get the camera in focus long enough? And so, I mean, basically he had his assistant camera operator on the focus ring. Robert's on the camera, handheld. And we're just walking with Tim being dragged. And so it's like you have like a – and then our sound guy on top of it. So you had like a group of people. There's somewhere on the internet, one of our crew members did a behind-the-scenes video of us actually doing that with all the crew following him as he was being dragged. And I just remember seeing that and be like, oh, my gosh, that's what it looked like. Like, this is crazy. If somebody saw this from the outside looking in, they would think we were crazy people.
Well, that's good. That's what you want. I want to know these things. Okay. Since you've told me you've prepped for these ahead of time, so let's get them going. Since your first time on the show, I have to ask you your favorite film.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's I'm that guy. I'm that guy that's like, that's an impossible question to ask. I would say the first film that pops in my head when you say that is Jurassic Park. That is just a film from my childhood that I just remember seeing in theaters and being like, my imagination is blown wide open. Like, this is insane. I'm like a 7-year-old maybe at the time, and I'm watching dinosaurs like that look realistic. I just remember like seeing that and being so flabbergasted at what I saw.
Because you're in Michigan, and every time I go to Michigan, I've never had a bad meal. So your favorite restaurant and the meal you order?
Ooh, in Michigan or just in general?
In general, I'll take.
Okay. You know, my wife's going to hear this and be like, you love pizza, so don't say anything different. But, and I do, that's true. I actually had pizza tonight. But I would say one of my favorite things is to go to a restaurant with my wife and get a Saganaki. Those are so good, man. I could eat, was it goat cheese or something?
Yes.
I could eat goat cheese for the rest of my life. It's so delicious.
Number three, a book on filmmaking that shaped you.
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say Sid Field's, I forget the name of the book, but it was Sid Field's Guide to Scriptwriting or something like that. I just remember reading that probably 6 or 7 times. My buddy loaned it to me. And by the time I ended up giving it to somebody else, it was like falling apart. Like I read this thing in the bathroom. I read this thing like instead of watching TV. Which is crazy for me because I love watching, you know, TV and movies and stuff. But I remember that book specifically. I could not get enough of it, and it just intrigued me so much.
So before we go, we did a little teaser at the beginning. I wouldn't tell anybody where to find your film because I honestly don't know. Because you sent me a screener. Where do you find your film?
Yeah, so right now it's pretty much available anywhere, like VOD platforms, I guess, video on demand platforms. But the big ones are Amazon and iTunes and Google Play. And you can even order DVD from Walmart, Target, or Barnes & Noble. So then I'm trying to think of all the yeah, I think those are the big ones. And then you can also – here's my suggestion. Go to our awesome website. It's www.survivethetent.com. You can – there's tons of stuff there you can watch the movie with. But there's – I created the website myself, and it has tons and tons of Easter eggs and little kind of like – just you got to look through the menus. Like I plug stuff in. Purposefully, and we actually, it's cool, we made a bunch of videos for Facebook and Instagram leading up to the release of The Tent that were like, the crisis is coming and it's the end of the world, and there's like little snippets of him giving recordings and just really cool stuff. So there's a bunch of extra content. Our DVD unfortunately doesn't have special features. It has a trailer, I think. But, like, all those special features you'd find on a DVD, they're on that website. So check out survivethetent.com. And then also there's a bunch of options to where to watch it on there, too.
Well, thank you for your time, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.